Radio Catskill. This is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report will have you gazing at a rare, full, seasonal blue moon. Two more participants of the 2024 BioBlitz share their comments on their species findings at the Highlights Foundation back in June. Director Tanis Kowalchuk involves Farm Arts Collective in climate change activism and this year's theater performance, Conference for Those Still Living. All of that coming up on today's Farm and Country after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. There is cautious optimism for a ceasefire in Gaza following 2 days of talks in Qatar. The talks concluded Friday, but NPR's Greg Dixon reports that mediators hope to finalize more details in the coming week.
President Biden said they are, quote, closer than we've ever been to a deal for a ceasefire in Gaza. The talks, mediated by Qatar, Egypt, and the United States, resulted in a proposal delivered to Hamas and Israel, bridging most of the remaining gaps between the two parties. In the next week, a technical team will attempt to work out final details, including a hostage-prisoner exchange. The mediators plan to meet again in Cairo at the end of next week in hopes of reaching an agreement. Meanwhile, the war in Gaza continues. Last week, the grim milestone of 40,000 Palestinian deaths was passed, according to health officials there, and over 100 Israeli hostages remain in Gaza. Greg Dixon, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Russia is accusing Ukraine of using Western-supplied rockets to destroy a strategically important bridge in Russia's Kursk region. The foreign ministry claims the rockets were probably American-made HIMARS. Ukraine's incursion into Russian territory is now in the middle of its second week. Kyiv claims to have taken control of 82 Russian settlements over an area of more than 440 square miles. Hurricane Ernesto over Bermuda, the National Hurricane Center says a Category 1 storm made landfall early today with top winds clocked at 85 miles per hour. National Hurricane Center Director Michael Brennan warns of dangerous storm surge and significant flooding.
The heavy rainfall, we're expecting 6 to 12 inch totals on Bermuda. We could see amounts as high as 15 inches, producing considerable flash flooding there.
Ernesto is not expected to make landfall in the U.S. It's on track toward Newfoundland, but Brennan says East Coast beachgoers should heed warnings about surf and rip current conditions. Former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris campaigning in Pennsylvania this weekend. NPR's Amy Held reports both candidates are banking on their economic message resonating with voters in that key swing state.
Voters say the economy is critical to their choice for the next president, while Pennsylvania is seen as critical to deciding the election. In the last two, Trump won, then lost the state, where the manufacturing, steel, and coal industries have been in decline for decades. Trump says he plans to roll back climate change efforts, which he blames for rising energy costs. Monday, he visits a Pennsylvania factory where he will pin higher prices on his rival. For her part, Harris says she plans to lower costs at the grocery store and pharmacy and offer tax breaks for families and funds for first-time homeowners. She's holding a series of small events with Pennsylvania voters Sunday, a day before the convention kicks off in Chicago. Amy Held, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations, from Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, two more participants of the 2024 BioBlitz share their comments on their species findings at the Highlights Foundation back in June. Farm Arts Collective Director Tanis Kowalczuk involves Farm Arts Collective in climate change activism in this year's theater performance, Conference for Those Still Living. But first, here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. This is a great week to gaze upon our closest celestial neighbor. The full moon will be on Monday, and the moon will appear nearly full for the rest of the week. The full moon technically only lasts for a moment when the moon is directly opposite the sun in the sky, but the moon will appear full one day before and after the full moon. This will be the first supermoon of the year. A supermoon occurs when a full moon coincides with the moon's closest approach to Earth. This full moon will appear 6.4% larger and 12.8% brighter when compared to an average full moon. Not only that, but this full moon is also the third of four full moons this summer and will be a seasonal blue moon. There are normally three full moons each season. Occasionally, a season will have four full moons because the moon cycle is just shy of 1 month. Seasonal blue moons occur every 2.7 years, with the next one occurring in May 2027. The phrase, once in a blue moon, is in reference to a seasonal blue moon and not the occurrence of two full moons in 1 month. The phrase was used in the early 1900s to describe a seasonal blue moon. Then, in the 1940s, the phrase was misinterpreted as the meaning we know today. This misinterpretation was repeated often enough so that the new definition of a blue moon became the standard. Enjoy the rare occurrence of a full seasonal blue supermoon on Monday. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
In all the night's magic, seems to whisper and hush. In all the soft moonlight, seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you? Oh, my love, can I just make some more romance with you? Oh, my love, one more moon dance with you in the moonlight on a magic night. La, 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 la. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love?
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr at the 2024 BioBlitz. It's being hosted by the Highlights Foundation in Boyd's Mill, Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful, cool summer day, and the event is well attended. Folks are walking around gathering all information about the species that were observed here in the last 24 hours. But I'm inside a tent here, and
My goodness, what is this? Are you, what?
It's a moth.
You're telling me. Can you describe the colors on that?
Orange, brown, yellow, and green. Yeah, little green dots right there.
Are there one or two moths in here?
Three.
Oh, my goodness, at the top. Oh, were you here in the middle of the night to see them catch these?
Yes. I was here in the middle of the night, but we were leaving, and I saw a bird swoop down while I was in the car.
But you saw them collecting these moths?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
There was a moth that they caught about this big.
And what color was that?
Like brownish.
These are beautiful. They look like little kites.
That's a damselfly.
My goodness, that's quite a large thing. How big do you think that is?
It can get about that big.
Well, you're showing me something that's like a foot and a half long.
Yes. This is a... It looks like a mosquito, but it's like some type of fly. This is some type of moth. Or it's a queen wasp. This is some type of mosquito.
Because they're nocturnal, they come out pretty late.
Well, I have to say, you seem to know a lot. How old are you?
9.
You're 9 years old, and can you tell me your name?
Brighton.
Yeah, I've only ever found...
Okay, and you seem very intelligent and ready to go. Are you ready to be a scientist?
Sure.
You want to go to school to be a scientist?
I want to homeschool. That's what I'm doing right now.
Oh, you're doing a homeschool. Well, I have to make sure that you get this little audio segment as part of your project. I'm very impressed with your knowledge. Does that look like a big black spider in this one? Look at the top over here. What is that?
That is a some type of spider that starts with a K.
He looks happy in there though, with the inside the leaves.
It's a girl.
Oh yeah, how do you know?
The eggs on its back. That's where the little tiny babies come from.
That's what all those little specks are inside of there, moving around. Those are babies.
Yep.
My goodness, you really do know a lot. You've taught me a lot, and I appreciate it.
And here, we got a slug trying to escape, and we got a snail almost escaping, which I am going to put back right here.
Now, how about this?
That is a... It looks like a black widow, but that one looks more like one. I think that's like a black Scottish fiend.
Do you think there's any brown recluse here? Have you seen any of those anywhere?
I mean, I've seen this super big one.
What is that?
It's a type of moth.
Oh, and it's alive. It's just on top of that wood, and the legs are moving when you picked it up. Is that the same one as in that box there?
No. As you can see, the wings are a little bit bigger. That means it's a different type of moth, and that one is like the outcast, because look at it. It was born with a disease which made its wings go brown, and it had no orange.
What kind of disease do moths have?
One type of disease.
It's okay. But let's go back to this one over here that you picked up. Do you have a name for this one?
If I would name it, I would call it the Prince of All the Moths, because this one is the second biggest one, and these are the biggest ones in the world.
Look at the front of this thing. It has these feathery. Do you see those feathery things in the front? Isn't that unusual?
Those are antennas.
Oh. You like this table, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Some species, some of them have a very deep, vibrant red. Some of them are yellow, some are orange.
Did you get any moths?
Only one showed up, and it was in really rough shape, missing half of two wings. So I didn't collect it, because it was on its last legs anyway. but yeah.
I'm listening ambiently to your expression of all of these. Can you tell me your name?
My name is Duncan Brown. I'm with the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's very impressive. And so is this young person right here. He's 9 years old and he gave me a tour of...
Yes. Yep, that one is. That's a tiger swallowtail.
I know.
How was your night last night collecting all these species?
Oh, it was amazing. I was thrilled with the amount of diversity that showed up. I was genuinely surprised. I didn't think we would get as much as we did. I mean, I was up until 4 a.m. just waiting for things to show up.
I was up all night. I didn't even sleep.
Because you were so excited.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you be?
I mean, I'm excited to come back.
Well, tell me, like, have you ever been to this site before?
No, I haven't. Actually, I haven't been to any BioBlitzes before. This is my first one, so it was a new experience, but really good.
The number here is 190 invertebrates, and it looks like you're going to win the prize.
Well, and it's—I mean—the actual number is going to be, I'm sure, significantly higher. We have a ton of specimens that we haven't gone through. I'm probably going to spend the next week back at the academy just sifting through all these various specimens, identifying and preserving them. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that go up to as much as 300.
That is gorgeous. That is beautiful. It looks like artwork.
This is the underwing one.
That's a spotted. That looks like a lanternfly.
It's similar looking, but that is actually a moth. And it is called an underwing moth. Very good. You're right. And that's because I actually have a specimen here. The underwings are often very vibrantly, brightly colored, whereas the forewings, because normally at rest, they're sitting like that where you can't see the vibrant colors.
But when
they move, you see the underwings. And
butterflies, you can flip up the little things, and then you see the underwing.
Exactly.
Did you find any spotted lanternflies?
No, actually, I didn't see any. I'm sure they're here, but I did not come across any as I was collecting.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So they're at least not here in huge numbers.
Any other invasive things that you feel are...
There's always going to be some invasives. Here's a pretty big one for fresh waters. This is called a mystery snail. This is an invasive species introduced likely due to the pet trade because they're actually quite common in like pet stores for fish tanks. So we end up getting a lot of these and they're very big and... not supposed to be here.
How do they end up in our ecosystem?
Because of the pet trade, someone probably had a fish tank. They didn't want it anymore. They just went out, dumped it in a stream, and now we've got a ton of snails. Yeah. It's similar to, like, down in the Everglades, how they have the snake, like, boa constrictors and stuff that aren't supposed to be there because people got pets, they got too big, they didn't want them anymore. Just let them go outside.
Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our radio audience about this experience here at Boyd's Mills and Highlights?
I would just say that it is a great way to get a number of scientists who study different fields together because, I mean, it's very rare that I interact with people who study birds or amphibians and reptiles, and it's just really nice to get to talk to those people and get to see their expertise and learn about the organisms they study.
Thank you for your expertise, your time, and your delivery of information that's usually not available to people like me. Thank you.
Of course, thank you.
Where are the mushrooms? Fungi. Jack!
I don't know if they got any mushrooms.
Oh my gosh, this is...
I'm Jack Barnett. A volunteer here at the BioBlitz. I'm on the steering committee and also supporting the fungal mushroom team this time. So we've got a small collection this year, about 35, maybe up to 40 mushrooms by the time we're done. So it's not a great time of the year for mushrooms. There tend to be spring mushrooms and there tend to be fall mushrooms, and this is kind of in between.
Well, this table is loaded with color and texture. What exciting things are here?
We've got a fair amount of these that are actually overwintered mushrooms that are kind of woody and by nature survive over the winter, and then we can collect them in the spring or June. And then we've got a few of them that are more fleshy that allow us to harvest them because they've come out new in the summer. We got a chicken of the woods. This is a terrible sample of chicken of the woods. It's one of the prime edibles, but this one is dehydrated and eaten. The slugs have been in it. It was the only sample we found this 24 hours.
I didn't know slugs like mushrooms.
Oh, slugs love mushrooms. There's one here. This is a black-footed polypore. The outer surface is still solid and dry, but the pore surface that they would normally be able to see is totally eaten out by slugs, and the little slug trails have left in it. This is a Canosipe. This is a very ephemeral mushroom. It literally comes up in the morning in the dew lawns and the pastures, and it's gone as soon as the sun hits it by noon. It just kind of melts away.
Well, does it come back, or is another one comes back?
Mushrooms are the fruiting body, so like the apple of an apple tree. So the mushrooms themselves are not so much the organism, but the reproductive organ of a mushroom. So what we're seeing here are all the effort the mushroom organism goes through to reproduce.
This one looks like wood.
It does, and this is actually, the common name is blue wood, because it's a piece of tree trunk or limbs that's been inhabited by a mycelium, which is the organism itself. It's little microscopic threads. And when it populates the media of the wood, it turns the wood blue. We don't actually know which of the two species this could be, because that kind of requires a lot more microscope and or DNA sequencing that we haven't done.
Were there any surprises in what you found?
Not really. This is not the surprising time, but the field of mycology is one of those rare scientific areas where amateurs can still contribute in a big way. And one of our team leaders is Dave Wanuski. He's very active. He's a retired math professor, but he's doing a lot of contribution to the field of mycology. His name has been put on papers. He's writing. He's doing DNA sequencing as a retiree. And so he's made a big difference. But so far, we haven't found anything unique here. Again, different times, different collecting everywhere. You keep finding new things, but not so far today.
Well, thank you so much. You speak so well, so I appreciate it. UpperDelawareBioBlitz.com has more information on the findings of scientists and amateur naturalists who worked for 24 hours to collect, identify, and catalog their count of more than 720 unique species observed on the grounds of the Highlights Foundation in Boyd's Mills, Pennsylvania. The species categories include birds, botany, fish, fungi, herpetology, invertebrates, mammals, and mosses and lichens. In preparation for this edition of Farm and Country that shared comments from BioBlitz 2024, I was thinking of the 10-year project Dream on the Farm, created by Tanis Kowalczuk and Farm Arts Collective. This year's theater performance, Conference for Those Still Living, centers on a world-famous ornithologist who has organized a weekend retreat on a farm. The subject of the retreat? Climate change. Have you been thinking how climate change has affected your life and the species living in your communities? Here is Farm Arts Collective Theater Director Tanis Kowalczuk sharing her comments on this year's performance, Conference for Those Still Living.
My name's Tanis Kowalczuk, and I'm the Artistic Director of Farm Arts Collective, and we have a new performance called Conference for Those Still Living. It is play number 5 in our Decalogue, our decade-long series of climate change performances, We started in 2020 with a performance called The Extinction Event. That was in the height of COVID. And this year, it's 2024, and it's our fifth performance. And this one's Conference for Those Still Living. It's set at a climate change conference. And it was developed over the last about 9 or 10 months. We always start in January of the year that we're performing in, the August of the year we're performing in. So we started January 2024. And this year's performance was really focusing on a character-driven performance creation process where, like, all these different characters come to this conference to share their knowledge, to share how they're working with climate change. They're scientists, they're activists, they're artists, they're chefs. There's, like, a really interesting interdisciplinary group. And we have this new building that we're working out of at Farm Arts Collective here at the farm. And so we changed the space into a conference space. Our work is immersive and feels like it's been a tropical storm for the last month. Come on, it's just been raining every day, it seems. And so we're doing the show, and we're going to take in the show. We go on a farm tour, and we're just doing that farm tour because, yeah, farmers don't get days off when it's raining, and neither does Farm Arts Collective. We've always done our shows, you know, bring the umbrellas, bring your raincoats. We do our shows. And in this performance, Conference for Those Still Living, the keynote speaker, the person who's organized the conference, he doesn't show up. And so it kind of spins off a little bit into some anxiety and into some feeling loss and fear. And the whole thing of the missing person, like if anyone knows Waiting for Godot, there's this like sense, this existential crisis thing, you know, that's happening in that performance. We're questioning our existence and we're waiting for something. And that's what I was hoping to get at in this show. And I'm hoping people can maybe see that metaphor of waiting for your leader or waiting for the person who's supposed to maybe save you or give you the answer, but they are not there. And it's really up to us and how we work with one another, right? And how we talk to one another. So that's what I'm hoping the show can like convey or like give people an inkling into it. Theater's a really complicated art. And you don't always get the message right away. Sometimes you have to see a show a couple times, and sometimes you have to keep working on a show for a number of years before you get to that place. But that's what we're trying to do with this show. It's a brand new piece. It's very young, but I'm really proud of it. I'm proud of my actors and of where they went to make this play.
Everything you just said is spot on, Tanis. Art imitates life. Everything is part of our daily lives, how we are in our human emotions about climate change, the decisions that we're making in our lives, what we're fearing or thinking or hoping or acting. And here we are on the farm. So we're very grateful that you give us an opportunity to sit and take a pause and think of things just a little bit differently. And I have to say, Doug Rogers did a fabulous job with the music.
Yeah,
the musicians and how, and I'm not going to give spoiler alert, the ending is great.
Yeah, diving into what is confusion and how does it feel to be confused and what can we do? What can we do when we don't know what to do? To quote that song we sing, what do you do? You have to come together. That's what you have to do. Come together. Yeah.
Coming together at Willowisp Organic Farm with Farm Arts Collective is always a treasure for anyone to experience. So if folks want to be able to participate in this, what would you suggest?
FarmArtsCollective.org.
Thank you, Tanis.
Thanks, Rosie.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, participants of the 2024 BioBlitz event that took place in June at the Highlights Foundation in Boyd's Mills, Pennsylvania. And to Farm Arts Collective Director, Tanis Kowalczuk, for sharing her comments on Conference for Those Still Living. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen on air and stream us live at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, conversations, and NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. Damascus Citizens.